It's very striking how much attention John gives to Jesus' trial with Pilate. He reports more detail than all the other Gospels combined. On that first Good Friday, if we'd been there, we'd have thought that Pilate was the man in charge, the one in control, the one with power. He was the Roman prefect with the authority of the Roman Empire behind him. As he says to Jesus in chapter 19, verse 10, he had the power to either free Jesus or to sentence him to be crucified. And there is Jesus, that pathetic, broken figure, apparently at the mercy of Pilate. But as John records the events, it's clear that the power and control lies with Christ, not with Pilate. The chief priests bring Jesus to Pilate's house because Pilate's a Gentile. They can't get in to Pilate's house, so Pilate goes out to them. And he's obviously knows something about Jesus because he had agreed to a detachment of soldiers to accompany those who arrested Jesus. So the chief priests had come expecting Pilate to confirm their judgment and order the death sentence by crucifixion. But Pilate, in verse 29, orders a fresh hearing in his presence. And that helps us to understand the somewhat truculent response of the priests in verse 30. If he were not a criminal, they replied, we would not have handed him over to you. Pilate then goads the priests. Take him yourself, judge him by your own law. In other words, it's your problem, you deal with it. But we can't. We haven't got the right of capital punishment. And John then adds that comment. This happened so that the words Jesus had spoken, indicating the kind of death he was going to die, would be fulfilled. The Jewish authorities wanted Jesus crucified so that he would be discredited as the Jewish Messiah, because the Old Testament scripture clearly stated, cursed is everyone who is hung on a tree. But God had ordained Jesus to be crucified so that he might become our sacrificial Passover lamb, so that we might be freed from the penalty of sin and death. And Pilate then goes back inside and asks Jesus directly, verse 33, are you the king of the Jews? And from what follows, Jesus in effect replies, well, what sort of king are you talking about? If you mean, am I a political rival to the power of Rome? No. But if you mean, am I the Jewish Messiah, the eternal Son of God, presiding over a kingdom far greater than anything this world has to offer? Well, then the answer is yes. So you are a king. And then Jesus utters the great Christmas text, because this is the only reference to Jesus' birth in John's Gospel, which we have in verse 37. Jesus answered, you are right in saying I am a king. In fact, for this reason I was born. And for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me. See, we're not talking here about opinions or ideas or suggestions, but about truth and reality. If I ever go through times of doubt, one of the things I do is to rehearse to myself the facts of Jesus' life and resurrection, which are well attested. But the other thing I do is to reflect on how the teaching of Jesus and the Christian message so accurately explains why the world is the way it is, and why I am the way I am. We human beings can demonstrate great acts of love and courage, but then in the next moment be utterly selfish and destructive. But above all, Jesus testifies to the truth about God. Pilate responds, what is truth? And with that, Pilate declares that he thinks that Jesus is innocent. He goes on to say immediately, I find no basis for a charge against him. Jesus is a deluded but harmless as far as Pilate's concerned. But when Pilate asks what is truth, he's speaking as if he's been transported back from 21st century Britain. Jesus, how can you claim to have the truth? Who knows what truth is? None of us could ever know the truth. No one's got the whole picture. Jesus is arrogant to make such a claim like that. You're so narrow-minded. How can he claim to speak for the truth? But to deny that Jesus is the truth and testifies to the truth is to have sided against Jesus. And actually, the subsequent behavior of Pilate bears that out. Just as our behavior, friends, will bear out whether or not we recognize that in Jesus we have all the truth about God before us in bodily form. Pilate realizes Jesus is no political threat to Rome. He offers to release, therefore, Jesus as the annual Passover amnesty. But the Jews aren't interested. No, give us Barabbas instead, not him. So Pilate changes tack. He has Jesus flogged. He knows that Jesus is innocent, yet he hands him over to be beaten. Pilate is a cruel man. Records, both inside and outside of the Bible, reveal just what a despot is. Pilate's reasoning is that if Jesus is thrashed and then humiliated, then the Jewish leaders will see that Jesus is a spent force and take pity on him. So Pilate goes out to the Jews again and says, look, I'm bringing him out to you. I think he's innocent. And then Jesus is brought out before them, a bleeding, broken, pathetic figure. Here is the man. And Pilate says those words dripping with irony. Here is the man you find so dangerous and threatening. Can't you see how harmless and ridiculous he is? This pathetic, broken figure wearing a crown of thorns and dressed in a purple coat. Oh, some king. Some political threat. Pilate is mocking Jesus, but he's also mocking the Jewish leaders. And yet John recalls those words of Pilate so that we may see the even deeper irony. Jesus is indeed the man. Yes, that broken figure is the man. Here is the Word made flesh. Here is the one who will restore what Adam lost at the fall and will create in himself a whole new humanity. Jesus was beaten and flogged so that we might receive God's caresses. Jesus wore the crown of thorns so that we might wear a crown of righteousness. Jesus was struck in the face so that God may wipe away our tears and have us live with him in a new creation. But the chief priests and the officials aren't going to buy Pilate's ploy. They are aware that the charge they are bringing against Jesus can have but one outcome if he's found guilty. Crucify him. Crucify. And now for the third time, Pilate expresses Jesus' innocence. But the Jewish leaders won't be put off. We have a law, and according to that law, he must die because he claimed to be the Son of God. And at this point, Pilate begins to get afraid. Matthew records in his gospel that Pilate's wife had a dream. And maybe about this time that she sent that message to Pilate, saying, I have nothing to do with this man because I've suffered greatly in a dream because of him. Up till now, Pilate's focus has been on the Jewish leaders. He's only secondarily be interested in Jesus. But now he interviews Jesus for a second time. And there's a bit of urgency. Where do you come from? Jesus remains silent. See, if Pilate dismisses Jesus' claim to be the truth, then the truth will be withheld from him. And that is a universal principle that continues to this day. If people reject Jesus, they will remain in ignorance and darkness. Do you refuse to speak to me? Don't you realize I have the power to either free you or to crucify you? And of course, Pilate is right. He does have that power. He is responsible for his actions, just as we are responsible for our actions. And all the creeds testify to Pilate's personal responsibility. He suffered under Pontius Pilate. And now, for the only time since he's been flogged, Jesus speaks. You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin. And Jesus does two things here. First, he affirms God's sovereignty. All this is happening under the control of God. Pilate would not be in this position, deciding Jesus' fate, if God had not put him there. And yet at the same time, Jesus affirms human responsibility. Pilate is guilty of sin. He's responsible for what he's about to do. But Caiaphas, the high priest, who's handed Jesus over to Pilate, who has a greater knowledge of Christ, is guilty of a greater sin. And now the hopelessness and the weakness of the most powerful man in Judea is exposed. Pilate wants to release this man. He knows he's innocent. He need only do what is right, and Jesus would be free. But the Jewish leaders have him over a barrel, because if word got back to Caesar that Pilate had released a Jewish pretender to the throne, and Pilate wasn't going to have that. And so for Pilate and the Jewish nation, the point of no return comes. Pilate sits in judgment over the one who will pass eternal judgment on him and the rest of mankind. Again, with deep irony, Pilate produces Jesus and says, "Here's your king." And yes, he is. And Jesus is indeed the Messiah, God's anointed king of Israel. Jesus came into the world to redeem his people. And yet the leaders of God's people shout, "Take him away, take him away, crucify him." Pilate gives them one last chance to change their mind. But they don't take it. Instead, they condemn themselves and their nation to judgment. God's people, who were to be a theocracy ruled by God, commit the most appalling apostasy when they publicly cry, "We have no king but Caesar." They reject the Messiah, their Messiah, and claim a Roman ruler as their king. Before we have a time of reflection, let me just make two quick comments. First, we see in Pilate the impossibility of remaining neutral to Jesus. Because Pilate didn't act on the truth, he ended up rejecting Christ and sharing in the guilt of the Jewish leaders. No one can remain neutral or indifferent to Jesus. Either we stand with Christ against those who oppose him, or we end up rejecting him ourselves. As Jesus himself once said, "Whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for me and for the gospel will save it." And then second, we're given here the reassurance that even when evil seems to have won the day, God remains in complete control. And what comfort and courage that gives believers. Because some of us will be going through times of great hardship. We may be facing the most appalling opposition and evil, but however dire things are, we are never on the losing side. God is in control, and his faithful servants can press on confident that they too will be vindicated, just as Christ was vindicated.